The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian. Still just enough football about to call it Football Weekly. Since we were last here, the Premier League and the Football League has shut down. Will there be a Final Four tournament for the Champions League, like a mini football under-9s competition? Elsewhere, Spain is in complete lockdown. We'll catch up with Sid, see how he's getting on. We'll cross to Archie in Germany and we'll speak to Susie Rack on the She Believes Cup, Phil Neville and the lawsuits in the United States. Also, we have a lot of your questions and suggestions for the direction of the pod in these troubled times, a review of Mrs. Brown's Boys, and for the first time, we won't give Philippe a time limit on his FIFA rant. However long this lasts, we'll keep doing The Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Philippe Auclair, lovely to see you.
Good day to you, Max.
Flo Lloyd-Hughes, how are you?
I'm okay.
Excellent.
Strange times.
Lots of people are saying strange times and trying to sound philosophical about it. Barry, could you just say strange times in your most melodic Irish lilt, please?
Strange times.
They really are. Paul says, what exactly is it that people who don't like sport do with their time? Because it's only been 2 days and I've already stood in the park watching people play petanque. and we have occasionally, you know, talked about whether there's too much football and how we feel about that. And sort of occasionally we get criticised for sounding a bit weary about the amount of football. But you don't realise what you've got till it's gone, eh, Barry?
Well, that's true. I mean, it was a strange week. Normally, of a weekend, I'd probably watch 4 games minimum, possibly 6. And to go from that to nothing is just cold turkey. I'm not bereft. I have other interests. I have lots of TV shows I want to catch up on, books I want to read, so I'll be fine. I mean, and it is important to preface today's pod, I suppose, with the big loud caveat that football is not particularly important in the cosmic scheme of things. People are ill, people are worried about work and how they're going to pay for things, and in that regard, football doesn't amount to a hill of beans. But yeah, we're obviously a football podcast and it's important to us, and I miss it, but I'm not as bereft as other people I've seen on social media.
Yeah, you're right, football doesn't matter, but it also does define a lot of us, and it gives us our routine, and actually it is for some people it is everything, right? It is, you know, it's a point of contact, it's something you do every Saturday. There are, you know, obviously fans that go home and away, there are people who volunteer at their amateur club every weekend, and so you are right, it isn't, what is it, a hill of beans? It doesn't amount to a hill of beans, but it does amount to a hillock of beans, if you will.
A molehill of beans.
That's the old Jorge Valdano quote, which I think is going to be used and quoted many, many a time, which is that all the things which do not matter at all, football is the most important.
I mean, he's so poetic, Philippe.
Where's Jorge Valdano in this case?
Flo, what did you fill your weekend with?
So I'm a little bit like Barry, actually. It was quite nice.
Don't think you want to say that out of context.
In the grand scheme of things, it was actually quite nice for me this weekend because I've been working 7 days a week since September and I haven't had a holiday that included no work in about 2.5 years. So this has actually forced me to switch off and actually rest and kind of enjoy life and hang out with my boyfriend on a weekend, which I think was quite shocking to the both of us. We had to work out what to do. So I played basketball. I finished a book. What else did I do?
Are you still together?
We're still going strong.
Oh, that's tremendous.
We're still discussing how we're going to find some eggs.
You finished a book in one weekend. Well, you write bloody fast.
No, it's a book I've been reading for about 6 months and hadn't been able to finish it.
So listen, it was announced on Friday that the Premier League and the Football League were to be suspended until the 3rd of April at the earliest. It came after the Arsenal manager, Mikel Arteta, tested positive, as did Chelsea's Callum Hudson-Odoi for COVID-19. Both squads are self-isolating. Some of all of Everton and Bournemouth self-isolating as well. The Champions League and Europa League have been suspended, as have the majority of national leagues around Europe. Football has come to a standstill, which is the right thing to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, I've spent the weekend working on football, actually, but not just, you know, on the consequences of what is happening right now, but also what is going to happen in the coming week in terms of the competitions that we can look forward or not look forward to in the future. And that's not just over this season, but over the next one and the one after that. But also been trying to think and write about issues which are related to football and perhaps which we usually do not spend much time thinking and writing about, and basically question a lot of the things that we've been doing without even thinking in football. So a moment of reflection.
Such as?
Well, to me, I think it's pretty obvious. I'm no specialist. None of us here is a specialist. But the effect, whatever happens, and when the worst is over, it will change the way we live forever. Okay? We've got to realize that. It's going to change the way we live together forever in terms of the way we congregate and so forth. So I'm thinking, okay, well, what is football going to look like if we have to be much more careful in terms of how do we bring fans to the stadium, for example, how do we group them? Can it be that the insanity of having a competition played in 12 countries, this will, I think, never, ever happen again. I don't think, by the way, this will happen for Euro 21 either.
Really?
I don't think so. I don't think it's an idea that is possibly, that can be sold to anybody. It would be crazy. But we'll see. I mean, I'm sure they'll keep their options open. The impact it's going to have economically and financially on the football world and in every single degree of the pyramid. The impact it's going to have on football law. I mean, there's loads of things we'll be able to talk about because, for example, all those players who are out of contract on the 30th of June, like Willian at Chelsea, for example, what happens if the season carries on in July? That's going to be interesting, isn't it?
So get Spurs into the Champions League. So there is this meeting with UEFA on Tuesday. Yeah. They're considering, this was in the Mirror in a few papers, actually, a kind of Final Four-style tournament in Istanbul and Gdansk to decide the Champions League and the Europa League. So they clearly have to get to the semi-finals somehow. Mm. And then you would have all four semi-finalists in the same city playing the semi-finals perhaps on one night, or consecutive days, and then the final a few days later. UEFA has called this video conference for Tuesday to discuss European football's response to the outbreak of the coronavirus. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about all these kind of things and what might happen. But Barry, that idea of a sort of semi-final special sounds actually quite enticing in a way.
Yeah, if it's workable, why not? Would it be behind closed doors?
Well, I mean, that obviously depends on when we come out of this.
It just seems a bit early, in my opinion, to be making any definitive decisions about what to do, because the one thing we do have lots of at the moment is time to mull over the best way to do things. But yeah, I wouldn't be against that in principle. I mean, I'm in favour of anything that works, to be honest, because it is a bit of a mess at the moment. I just think it is a bit early to make any definitive decisions when football has more basically been cancelled till the beginning of April at the very earliest, and I would imagine the postponement will continue on indefinitely after that.
The National League went ahead. I've just done a radio show with Jamie O'Hara, the manager of Billericay, who said he couldn't believe it went ahead, and other managers. Some of the games were cancelled because of, you know, one player in the team feeling symptoms and self-isolating, and the whole squad self-isolating. It seems a strange decision from the National League. I don't know if it's a decision that should have been taken out of their hands, Flo, or if they've seen what everyone else has done and wondered why they would carry on.
I think it's a decision that should have been taken out of their hands. It was the same in the Women's National League, and some games ended up not going ahead and a couple did go ahead. And I think what was disappointing is it looked a bit greedy as well, because there was no other football going on. And I think a few clubs thought, well, this is a fantastic opportunity. And South Shields got a league record. Over 3,000 people turned up for that game. And there's been articles written in the local paper about them being a beacon of hope amongst the crisis. And it just feels a bit hollow trying to kind of capitalise on this moment. I understand, you know, people want to go see football and you're also a very important part of the community. They had Jade from Little Mix, who is a local celeb, down to the game.
Great.
But at the same time, you are potentially putting not only your fans, but also the players in danger. And I think it's all well and good saying, let's play behind closed doors. But as soon as the players and the coaches get sick, which is what we saw in the Premier League, then you're not going to have any football. So I found that quite frustrating, and a lot of the players and the managers came out afterwards saying they were angry about it and wish it hadn't gone ahead. But then there were other clubs who seemed to relish in the fact that they were the only football being played that weekend.
And I always thought Perry from Little Mix was the Geordie, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think there's two Geordies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Perry's self-isolating with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. Yeah. You saw that video they made where...
Is that her?
Thousands and millions of Liverpool fans looking at their star midfielder dancing on a marble floor wearing socks, dancing up steps going, Jesus, mind your fucking knee.
I was worried, but imagine stubbing a toe. Oh, horrible.
But, you know,
James Milner, if anyone's interested, has made a sort of a response, which is on Twitter, and very funny.
Two of them are from South Shields. Thank you for...
By the way, the irresponsibility of the decision is also to be seen in the fact that elite sports people have got very, very low, fragile immune systems, very, very low. For one reason, they're constantly on the verge of the absolute top of their, you know, the way they exercise their body. I mean, it's well known, for example, in the Tour de France, one of the reasons people are saying, well, they take all this anti, you know, flu, chill medication. One reason there's one reason for that. They're so fine-tuned that they catch everything. And they don't have the response for that, which explains, for example, if you take the Valencia team, for example, they have something like 5 players now who have been, have tested positive. There was a very interesting piece by Eva Carneiro, you remember, Jose Mourinho's friend, about the fact that sports people are more prone to catch the disease, these kind of diseases, than other people. So it makes the idea of having these people train even more irresponsible.
I think also what is so frustrating is in the case of the National League is if your players are potentially self-employed, you know, we always hear when the FA Cup draws come up, potentially they're bricklayers or plumbers or electricians or whatever it may be. If they're potentially getting ill at the game on Saturday, Sunday, then they can't work either. And that's what's so frustrating is these aren't guys on multimillionaire contracts who can just press pause and potentially not play for a couple of weeks. These are guys who, like anyone in society, need to be protected to earn a living, and you're putting them in danger by playing the game.
Obviously, there's been lots of speculation about how this league should finish. A massive surprise that Karen Brady wrote an article saying they should just annul the season, especially given what a great season West Ham are having. She did tweet following that. Everyone agrees that Liverpool deserve to win the title because it was about, you know, Liverpool can't get the title if they don't finish the season. The Premier League and the EFL are doing all we can to ensure the season is finished, including suspending games, isolating players, etc., etc., etc. My point was safety of fans, players comes first, and staff. If the remaining games cannot be played, the only fair and reasonable thing is to declare the season null and void. Obviously, we've all thought about this a lot, and from my point of view...
It should be pointed out that that clarification was issued in the face of a relentless barrage of abuse regarding her self-interest. Her column was so crass, like tin-eared, at you know, when this thing is just starting and
of course, yeah,
the wider ramifications. So I suspect... You know,
but I think the idea of what happens, and I don't know what you think, but for me, it's this season has to finish, right? And the 2020-2021 season hasn't started. Nobody has any points. Nobody's played any games. Mm-hmm. If that season never happened, it would be a weird asterisk in 100 years' time when people went, why did that season never happen? But it's more important to finish this season, even if that's in October or November or December, than it is to start a new one. I don't know if anybody agrees or disagrees.
I agree with you entirely. And if it means that 2020-2021 is curtailed, use a system like they use in South America, for example, with an apertura and a clausura, which is that instead of having 38 games, you have 19. Well, perfectly possible to do that. Why not? I absolutely agree with you. For Karen Brady, I need to say she's not alone in having this position, because in France, Jean-Michel Aulas, the president of Olympique Lyonnais, who are also having such a fantastic season in the league, with, I think, their worst record since 1996-97, has also suggested that we should finish and everything stays like that. So we're still qualified for Europe, basically, Nixon. And the response of Jean-Louis Leca of Art Silence has been, I think, quite magnificent. And I think that's probably what Brady should have got from some of her fellow football pangendrums. And Leca said, to think of your own interest in a situation like this, how can I say? I thought he was a great president, but the esteem I had for him has lowered a lot. And that's the nice bit. And then it's all for himself, for his own interest. He's ready to shit on the others. He only can think about his ass. It's back to the Middle Ages. Quote, unquote. That was good, I thought.
I really agree with you. Now, obviously, there's no football. So the BBC decided to put Mrs. Brown's Boys on instead of Match of the Day. Kieran said, did anyone manage to avoid the Mrs. Brown's Boys scores all day on Saturday before getting to it? Surely we should be putting old football on at that point.
Well, yeah, I would be in favour of it. I mean, the vilification the BBC got for putting on Mrs. Brown's Boys. There's a lot of snobbery about it. I'm not a fan of the show, but it is very popular. But it did seem a weird thing to put on.
I'd never watched it before, but I watched it. And actually, there was one joke that made me really sort of spit out my tea with laughter. It was.
You think even Question of Sport would be a better option than Mrs. Brown's and Boys reruns?
If Question of Sport is a better option,
exactly,
you are in a difficult place.
But something at least sport related.
At least, if they were going to put Question of Sport on, it would have to be from the Emlyn Hughes, Bill Beaumont era, frankly. I guess there might be rights issues about putting on old football. I don't know. I mean, no,
I think if
isn't.
It's archives, it doesn't matter. If BBC already have rights to that competition or they've got the archives, it shouldn't be an issue.
I know that, and I know for a fact, because it was I was told this by a Premier League rights specialist, I won't give his name, but he said the situation regarding rights for all games played in England until 1991-92 is so unclear that anybody could actually broadcast them without any fear of being sued for anything.
Stick on Liverpool-Arsenal from 89. Every Saturday.
Every day.
Why doesn't John Barnes take it into the corner? Richard says, a lot of people are saying, you know, that they could put on a tournament. He said, which football tournament should be rerun on TV? I'd go for USA 94. I mean, any World Cup. Stick on a World Cup, it'd be so good.
España 82. It's just brilliant from beginning to end.
I'd quite like to watch Spain 82, actually, because it's the first World Cup I was kind of aware of. I was 9 when that was on. And I do remember watching. I remember my parents and my sister and I were on holidays watching Northern Ireland beat Spain in a Spanish bar, and the barmen just going absolutely berserk. with rage. And it was kind of my first, this is what it's all about.
Depressus Flow, the first World
Cup? I was going to say,
that you can vaguely remember?
98, but about. I was only 5 years old.
Oh, my God.
But I wanted to say, I hope, while we're talking about TV, I hope Sky and BT might consider cutting down their sports subscription price, because another broadcaster in the Nordics has done it, so it's not like everyone else is trying to cash in. So I'm hoping they might look at what others are doing and potentially do a little bit of a discount, because it is utterly ridiculous.
Right, that'll do for part one. Part two will begin finding how Sid Lowe is getting on lockdown in Spain. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Just to repeat that the Football Weekly live event at Earth in Hackney on 23rd of March has been postponed as a precaution, obviously. 9th of April in Leeds is still on as it stands, but obviously we will keep you updated on that one. Let's go to Sid Lowe, who is on lockdown in Spain. Sid, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
I'm really good. So what's going on? I mean, I was sort of more concerned about you than La Liga, to be honest. What's happened? What's it like?
Well, the truth is that what's going on, I suppose the slightly flippant answer to that is nothing, which is kind of what's supposed to be going on. You know, there was a decision made at the weekend to isolate. And I say nothing, by the way, and let's caveat this very early by saying now is Monday morning. right? So things have changed. So there was a decision made on Saturday afternoon that, that essentially the country would go into lockdown, that people would be told to stay at home and only leave home for essential things. So, for example, all businesses were closed down except food shops, obviously supermarkets, food shops, tobacconists, hairdressers, which sounded funny at first, but actually has been explained as, you know, there's a significant portion of the population that, that actually need that, unable to wash their hair and so on without it. Doctors, obviously, and vets. And that's it, I think. I may be missing something out. And everything else was shut down, and people were told, so all restaurants were shut, although there are still deliveries, and people were told to stay at home. Now, obviously, this started with schools shut down last week. Then, of course, what happens is schools shut down and all those kids go to parks. Then they shut the parks down. Then bit by bit, they start to shut down all open space, and basically, essentially, what there is now, in theory at least, is a curfew. Only a curfew that's not based on a certain time. It is all the time. You should be at home all the time and not leave home. The reason why I say caveat this with it's Monday morning, of course, was one of the things that was said in this was you should only leave home for essential tasks, including going to work. And if you go to work, you go to work and you come straight back. So, of course, after a weekend of a really kind of eerie stillness to everything, and I know this is a daft little thing, but it does feel a bit weird to have this kind of eerie stillness, this sense of an apocalypse coming, and it'd be such a glorious weekend. It was really lovely over the weekend, and sort of you're looking out the window and thinking, okay, this is really, really odd. But because now's Monday, people are out. And so I haven't been out of the house. But there's been lots and lots of photographs, for example, of metro trains that are absolutely packed. And so you think that in a way, these measures are going to end up being largely pointless if that isn't stopped as well. And so I suspect that the next step will be to try and prevent people going out, even if it's to work. Obviously, this has huge economic impact. It has huge kind of practical impact on people. So I'm not quite sure where it's going to go. But the last couple of days, and we're only at the start of this, you know, it's easy to say, well, things are going well, but you know, it's kind of day three in the Big Brother household. We haven't got to 15 yet.
So if you were to just walk out of your house now, is there a policeman wandering around?
Well, this is the thing. Yes, is the answer to that. So as I said before, parks are closed. But there's, you know, huge open spaces weren't. So, for example, on, I can't remember which day, it must have been Saturday, we went round the kind of what's a local heath. So you see no one. So you get on your bike and you think, well, you're going to get on your bike. You're not touching anyone. You're not going near anyone. It's a big open space and it was still open. And so you cycle around. And this was before this announcement that, right, everything must close. You cycle around. And genuinely, as we came off what's this kind of, I suppose, heathland, scrubland, whatever you want to call it, there was police tape. And we're like, oh, okay, so we're the ones out here and we've clearly done something wrong, or at least because the decision was actually made while we were on there. So you come off and there's police tape. And then, yes, as you say, there are police cars going by. And there are police cars going by telling people to go home. Now, if anyone wants to borrow Estella, they can do, because one of the reasons that you are allowed out is to walk the dog. But you cannot walk the dog in groups.
Right.
You cannot, you know, you've got to take the dog out for a minimum time possible and bring the dog back. So to give you an example, yesterday I went out for genuinely no more than 45, 50 seconds to take the rubbish to the bins that are obviously not in the house, you know, the kind of the big kind of community bins. And you stand outside and you kind of feel like a fugitive. You know, you stand there and you say, oh, I better not stay here for long, because there is no one around. And yeah, there's been lots of footage of cars going around, police cars, this is going around and telling people to go home. There's extraordinary footage of a police van driving through Benidorm and doing in English and Spanish saying go home. So as I say, it is like a curfew. Now, there's been illustrations and examples of places where people have tried to ignore this, and then of course there can be fines. There were fines yesterday for people going out on their bikes, which of course we're no longer doing. There's been suggestions of this being clamped down, but of course you get to a Monday morning when people go to work, and then it doesn't stand up as well anymore, and it's far, far harder to impose.
It must be a nightmare. So I mean, the league, obviously, it's ridiculous to talk about it in a way, but what's the chat about how that season will be completed?
Right, well, there has been some chat about this, not least because the president of the league, Javier Tebas, was on a radio show last night saying that, you know, he said, I'm convinced that we will finish the season, that we will find a way of wrapping the season up and playing all the games. The president of the federation who said, I mean, it made me laugh, maybe it shouldn't, but he said, no, we're having meetings at the Federation, but it's a big room and we're sitting a long way apart from each other. Which, I mean, I don't know if that's sufficient, but you know, it sort of sounded bizarre and you have this bizarre image of people standing apart. And by the way, these queues, you see photographs of queues outside tobacconists and supermarkets and stuff. And in theory, in these queues, people are standing 2 metres apart. So, you know, should anyone cough, it doesn't reach anyone else and so on. But anyway, the president of the league says, I'm convinced this will be done. He says that they're talking to other leagues about ways of finding the dates for this to be played. I mean, look, this is me talking and it's no more of an opinion, but I don't see where those dates come from unless Euro 2020 is cancelled and that therefore games can be played into the summer. I've spoken to a number of footballers over the weekend and they're all saying, well, look, at the moment it's 15 days. But of course, it's 15 days in which you're at home and you're doing training regimes, but they can't do the same training regimes. You know, you can't come back 15 days and immediately play. Or maybe they can. Maybe that's what they'll ask them to do. Obviously, there are four basic scenarios that have been suggested in Spain for finishing the league. One is it just ends as it is. So what are we? Week 27, I think. And the season ends here. And these positions are the positions. And as you've all had in England with Karen Brady's suggestions, lots of people are saying, well, that's not fair. Well, that is fair and that's not fair. And it kind of partly depends on where the teams are as to whether or not they think it's fair. Another suggestion is, obviously, the best possible suggestion is that the season gets finished, all the games get played, and the season is normal. There's a suggestion that maybe you only take the results from the first half of the season. Now, that's plausible in Spain in a way in which it wouldn't be in England, because, of course, the way the Spanish season works is that you play two halves of the season. So you play everyone once in the first half and everyone once again in the second half. So if you did cut it off at the halfway stage, although you haven't necessarily played everyone home and away, you have played everyone once. So there is a certain kind of containedness of the season. And of course, suggestion number four is that the season is null and void. Suggestion number four is that, right, this season doesn't count. There isn't a champion. There isn't anyone who goes down. There isn't any European places. There's no one coming up. And we just start next season as if we were starting this season. As I say, the president of the league is saying, we think we can get this finished. He's also talking about the money. He believes that the impact of actually the season not happening could be as high as 650-700 million euros. No one really knows whether or not those figures truly stand up, because, of course, I'm sure there'll be almighty legal battles with TV companies paid for a whole season and don't get it. Maybe the league will come to an agreement with them that you can't just say, right, the TV money is, I think this is right, 1.8 billion euros. And therefore, you've got a third less, you take a third off, which is more or less the calculations that have been made. I suspect it doesn't quite work like that. But certainly, yeah, the impact is gigantic, of course.
Of course, before this decision was made, there was the case at Real Madrid. One of the basketball players contracted COVID-19. Both the basketball and football squads went into self-isolation. There were Instagram videos of Sergio Ramos on a treadmill. It just feels so long ago now, Sid, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible how quickly it feels. I was going to say normalized then, but that's not the right word, but feels like something we've been in for some time. As you say, I mean, the kind of the big first hit was, right, Real Madrid going to lockdown. There's been five confirmed cases at Valencia, including the fullback Gaya, who put a very interesting message up earlier. He said that, you know, I've got no symptoms. You know, I've been tested positive, but I have no symptoms. So remember that you may have this. And he was very much trying to, there's a big process, I think, of trying to make people conscious of the significance of this and conscious that staying at home isn't just about, oh, I feel all right, I'll go out. No, it's not like that. And he said, look, I've got no symptoms. I'm staying at home. This isn't necessarily about us. It's about who it leads to. It's about breaking the transmission chain of the virus and so on. So he's one of five at Valencia. I think it's three players and two medical staff. There are two members of the coaching staff at Alaves. The rest of the squad is being tested. The playing squad is being tested today. Obviously, they're all in lockdown anyway. There is a club, I probably shouldn't name them. There's a club in the first division that at the moment, at least, is planning to go back to training tomorrow. But obviously, everyone there thinks there's absolutely no way we go back to training tomorrow. And at the moment, the assumption is that, yeah, this is 15 days. And in 15 days time, someone tells us, right, either we go back, depending on the recommendation from the health authorities, or recommendations from government, or this continues. And as I say, most people assume that this will continue because, obviously, look, in the case of a lot of footballers, they're in a relatively strong position because a lot of them have very good home gyms, a lot of them have gardens and so on. But there are still significant numbers of footballers who live in flats, who are you know, having to use a static bike on the balcony, whose physical condition can't be match-playing physical condition, even if in 15 days' time they are told they can go back to training.
Andy says, who has the worst singing voice amongst Sid's neighbours? We've seen those videos from Italy, haven't they, of everyone coming together, singing along. Although there was that great video from Italy of someone playing a flute really badly and someone coming out of the house and just bashing it out of their hands. Has there been any, you know, coming together of your community, Sid, to sing?
Well, funnily enough, in fairness, this was actually before the ban happened, but there were kind of four sets of neighbours standing in the street below, and all of them about 2 metres apart. I looked out the window. It was quite this kind of amusing conversation of it was like a rondo, you know, on a training pitch. They were kind of passing the conversation around, but not actually getting close enough to each other. I think there's a very simple answer to your question, which is, which of the neighbours has the worst singing voice? It's me by a very long way.
Stay safe. Love to your family.
Cheerio. Take care.
Sid Lowe out. In Spain. From Spain, we'll go to Germany and Archie Rintat. Archie, are you self-isolating in Lucas Podolski's kebab shop?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully the kebab shop is still open for business. Otherwise, I don't know how I'd be able to sustain myself, Matt. Just about, yes.
Strange times for all of us. So the Bundesliga was the last, really, of the big leagues to fall. Why were they being resistant?
I think it was similar to the way that the Premier League were acting, to be honest. It was almost a wait-and-see approach until it actually hits the league itself, with someone like Mikel Arteta, for example, in the Premier League. In the Bundesliga, you had Paderborn coach Steffen Baumgart being tested for it. That returned as negative, but you had Paderborn defender Luca Kilian testing positive for it. You had, during the course of the day, Werder Bremen Leverkusen being called off by the local government in Bremen. And I think as the pressure grew as well, you had Thiago Alcantara, Bayern Munich midfielder, coming out and saying people need to realise what's really important here. And despite the words of Bayern chairman Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who was saying we still need to play here behind closed doors, not much of a surprise that to those who followed the words and actions of Karl-Heinz Rummenigge over the years. But yeah, after that, I think the pressure eventually told.
You live in North Rhine-Westphalia, right? The area that has the highest concentration of cases in Germany.
Do.
What's the official advice where you are?
Where I am, no mass events anymore. I walked by the cinema yesterday, and any sort of mass gathering there or any kind of gathering sorts of activities are now banned for the next month. You see in Berlin, for example, that all sport is off the card till mid-April. I think we're closing in on the sort of quarantine that we've seen in other countries here. You see the borders to France, for example, being closed off. It's rapidly accelerating here, as it is, I think, in lots of other places.
What did you do this weekend, Archie? I love pod small talk now, being on the pod.
I'm wondering what version of this to say.
Oh, come on, give us all the details, Archie.
I had a Tinder day on Sunday.
Oh, right. Well, Tinder's quite an interesting part. Did you discuss the coronavirus?
I was going to say, how does one date in quarantine? Oh. How does that work?
Yeah, good question. I might be about to find out.
Are you gonna wear your hazmat suit, Archie?
Are you gonna see her? Yeah. Are you gonna see her again, Archie?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh. Make sure steady. you pick a good one. Otherwise, you might be stuck with them for a couple of weeks.
Absolutely right.
And no kissing either. That's one guaranteed way to spread it.
I feel that ship has sailed, Barry. But I don't want to speculate. we're gonna. The next question is: what are your plans for the next few weeks and months, Archie? But maybe we know.
No, I mean, to be honest, it's a mixture of learning to play the piano this end,
nice.
You know,
yeah.
Which is going all right. Returning to Football Manager 2010 mm-hmm. to try and repeat Fulham's run to the Europa League final. That's a bit more nerdy. But, you know, on Wednesday, Max, it is the 10th anniversary of Fulham's humbling of Juventus. So you've got to celebrate that in some way. I know how much Philippe treasures that. Well, in his heart, for example.
I will be celebrating it, actually, Archie, and I've planned to do something with Sammy about it.
Simulate it on FIFA or
well,
something.
Well, that Clint Dempsey chip is one of the greatest goals of all time.
One of the greatest moments of anything that ever happened in any galaxy. Something like that.
I wholeheartedly agree with every word and syllable that Philippe has just uttered there. So yeah, I think I've got the DVD of that lying about somewhere. So yeah, but I needed to rest anyway, Max. That sounds awful. No, I didn't mean
listen,
that.
Listen, it's Archie. No. Look, it's good to hear you're doing so well.
Crack on. Oh shit.
We love you, Archie.
You've got me there.
Yeah, we love you. And we'll no doubt speak to you in the next weeks and months. Thank you, Archie. Bye. Rintutt. We got more than I thought we'd get. There you go. That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll talk about some football that's actually happened, the She Believes Cup last week. Susie Rack was there and she'll tell us all about it. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's talk to the Guardian's women's football correspondent, Susie Rack. Susie, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, really good. And you've watched some actual football, maybe the last football that any of us will see, the She Believes Cup out in the States. You were there. Strange time to be anywhere, right? Strange time to be in the States, I imagine. How was it?
Yeah, it's a little surreal. Started off fine, you know, kind of managed to sneak in a trip to Universal Studios and things like that. And then by the end, everything was shutting down. So a little bit strange. But, you know, we were kind of lucky just to miss the chaos.
Mm. And on the pitch, I mean, chaos might be the right word. Is that the right word to describe England's performances, or it's sort of not interesting enough for chaos, is it?
Yeah, chaos would give you something to write about. I think it was quite telling that in the second match against Japan, which England won 1-0, we were just kind of sitting there with nothing to write because it was just really, really dull. You know, that was the game they won. I suppose you could describe the defence as a bit chaotic most of the time whenever the ball went anywhere near them. But other than that, it was just really kind of flat performances, which was very, very disappointing to kind of kickstart the year.
Phil Neville has said he's got to start earning his coin. Is there anybody who's really still backing Phil Neville?
His mates. There have been a few men's football journalists who I think have got kind of pre-existing relationships with him from his playing days, who have sort of come out and given a semi-robust defence of him as a manager, and, you know, saying it's not that bad and putting the blame on the players. But I think the very fact that he's come out himself and said that he kind of deserves criticism and, you know, questions need to be asked and things like that shows that, you know, he is at least recognising that things haven't been good enough for quite a while. I mean, anyone looks at 11 games and 7 defeats is going to see that there's some kind of problem going on there.
Susie, I did a Copper 90 YouTube show with Farrah Williams the other day, and she was saying, in her mind, the only viable solution is bringing in, if you're not going to sack him, bring in a coach to support him. Do you know, is that an option that is being explored, or do you think it would just cause too much disruption?
I know the FA are completely 100% behind Neville at the moment anyway. I mean, you know, it's always the case that a manager is backed until they're not. At the moment he's got the full backing of the FA, and I think the only way he's going anywhere is if he were to leave himself. I don't think there's a chance of another coach coming in. The fact that they've brought in Dawn Scott as a high performance coach is like absolutely massive, and I think is what they see as the sort of the game changer in kind of helping them close the tiny gaps. But for me, the weird thing is Neville keeps going on and saying, it's the little things. It's we need to get back to basics, passing from A to B. And it's like, passing from A to B is surely the most basic fundamental of the game that they do every day, week in, week out for their clubs. Mm-hmm. And if they're failing to do that for their national team, then surely something is just a little bit more wrong than that.
Susie, Phil has in the past been quite ratty with journalists who question his abilities to manage this team. Has there been any sign of a bit more humility in light of their most recent underwhelming performances?
Oh yeah, completely. Ever since Portugal, where he kind of let rip at a Young Times journalist and kind of lost the plot a little bit, he's been, I think, told to peg it back a little bit and to wake up to the fact that, you know, generally, most journalists actually want to see England do quite well, and we're not necessarily the enemy. So he's generally been quite decent to the press. if like fairly bullish in protecting the players, which he keeps banging on about. But yeah, generally he's been actually quite pleasant to deal with. If, you know, kind of now bearing the brunt of a lot more criticism than he was previously.
Fascinating story in the US, isn't it? Carlos Cordero, the US soccer president, resigning after a pretty explosive week, which started with court filings, ended with a pre-match protest from the United States team. He was only in post for 2 years, but players and sponsors were clearly unhappy with the way the federation was handling the upcoming lawsuit between themselves and the women's team. Was it a surprise, Susie? And what happens next?
I don't think it was too much of a surprise once the latest court filings had come out, which kind of really did, well, I mean, Megan Rapinoe called it irreparable damage to the relationship between the players and the US Soccer Federation, because it said that the women's team don't have the strength and skill levels of the men's national team or the responsibilities of the men's national team. And that has sort of been their narrative kind of throughout this whole dispute behind closed doors, but it finally went public. And so from that point on, there was sort of nowhere for Cordero to go. The protest in Dallas was really quite impressive, because it was, they had planned it, but they hadn't really thought about exactly what they would do and how they would do it. And so they turned their shirts inside out, and it was quite cool because you couldn't see the US soccer logo, but you could see the four stars above it, which was completely coincidental. And that, you know, they're kind of laughing afterwards that you couldn't see the US logo, but you could see their achievements there, you know, their four World Cups, like really, really clearly. From that point on, he had to go. The problem is, you know, he's just the tip of the iceberg. It's really the board of directors that have presided over the whole legal strategy. That you know, they've been sitting in meetings and depositions and negotiations for, you know, years with the USSF, where they've kind of had this narrative and this line of argument throughout. So he is a little bit of a kind of being sacrificed for the sake of the rest of the USSF at the minute, but more need to go. The board of directors as a whole has been completely complicit in the entire thing from start to finish, and actually took more control of the way things are run 2 years ago, so have had an even bigger say than they would have done before that in the way the court case has been run. So yeah, it's a bit of a crazy time. We were really lucky to be in Dallas for the protest and then for the response from the players, because there was no national US press there at all. There was a couple of local Dallas reporters and some Japanese reporters, and other than that, it was just us. So we got all of the conversations with Megan Rapinoe, with Carly Lloyd, Becky Sauber, and all of them on kind of what they thought of it and their immediate reaction to Cordero's statement that was literally released to the press within minutes of the final whistle of them winning the She Believes. So, you know, again, really badly timed statement that aimed to overshadow their achievements there, which was another pretty damning indictment of the way they've done things.
And in terms of domestic football over here, Susie, obviously the WSL has been suspended. Financial margins are tighter in the women's top flight than in the men's, of course. What are the players saying about their immediate future?
Yeah, a lot of worries, and particularly the lower league players who are being made to sort of play on because the National League hasn't been called off in the same way that the men's has. They're quite worried about the risks that are posed in those games not being called off too, and some are taking the matters into their own hands. Some clubs are anyway. Like you say, club finances are shaky. So I think there's a lot of fear for the future, because not only if you know, some of the smaller clubs struggle, there'll be problems. Even if the bigger clubs on the men's side struggle, what's going to get hit first? I mean, highly likely that one of the women's teams are going to be the first to be affected. Then you've got the issue of the fact that player contracts are generally only like 1 year or 2 years at most at the moment. You don't really get long-term contracts. So you know, you've got contracts that will be expiring this summer, and a lot of contracts will be expiring this summer that won't get renewed, and they won't have anywhere to go because clubs will be too scared to sign players when they don't necessarily know whether the new season is going to restart. So you're going to have players out of contracts, professional players who don't have anywhere to go or kind of any alternative employment given current situation to go to. So, yeah, I think there's going to be quite a lot of issues for particularly professional players who don't have any kind of alternative form of employment and don't have sort of big sums of money to sit back on like Premier League players do.
And now, Susie, over the next few weeks, we may have quite a lot of time and space to talk about things. You are writing a book. So what is the book you're writing and when will you come in and read it out to us?
Got to write it first.
We're going to move on.
Yeah, no, I'm quite almost glad for the break because it means I might actually be able to do some work on it. No, it's like sort of a social political history of women's football around the world with a bit of a focus on England having been the birth of it and the US sort of having then taken it and run with it. Sort of a bit of a look about the developments, the ban of women's football in England and parts of Europe and then how it's recovered and that kind of thing, basically. Plan is it will be done in time for the 2021 Euros, which now look like they're in doubt too because of the men's being shifted back.
Good luck with your writing, Susie, and we'll see you soon. Susie Rack there, the women's football correspondent for The Guardian. Philippe, you wanted to talk about the football writers and
yes,
what's happening with freelancers, because obviously lots of people in freelance, not just in football, obviously, but, you know, lots of people are freelance and it's a tough time for them.
It's a very, very tough time. I say that being a freelancer myself, but a lot of people are far, far worse off than I am and who've lost within 24 hours their livelihood with absolutely no protection, be it if they have to stop working because they're in self-isolation or because suddenly their contracts are taken away from them or because there is nothing to report upon. And we obviously are very all aware of it within the profession. And the Football Writers Association we're putting together at the moment a group. I'm leading this group, which is basically trying to get all these people who are encountering problems within our profession. It could be broadcasters, it can be writers, it could be people, sub-editors, whatever. People who are in the football media reporting industry to get in touch with us. So that we, first of all, we know where they are, and we can also work on their behalf. There are loads of things that we would like to do, such as, for example, I know it's valid for all other professions and all other freelancers, but for example, the fact that the people will have a second tax bill coming on the 31st of July for self-employed is going to be absolutely catastrophic for some of them. How to get mortgage relief, how to get rent relief, job opportunities. Very importantly as well, psychological and mental health counseling, which, you know, some guys have already asked to offer. So get in touch with me, and I've got an email address. I mean, I'm sure we'll put it on the link on the website, but it's very easy to remember. It's Philippe, one L and two P's, guys, auclair.fwa@gmail.com. So philippe.auclair.fwa@gmail.com. And if you work in the industry, you're a freelancer and you're affected by what's happening, get in touch with me and we'll try to stick together and to do something.
You're a good man, Philippe. Philippe Auclair's FIFA rant time. you wanted to do a little bit on how this may have affected this whole COVID-19 would affect Manchester City and CAS.
Yeah, and I think it will have a direct effect because if things had gone as we thought they would be going, we would have been expecting perhaps a resolution of the case or a first resolution of the case around the 30th of May. But with what's going on, that's what I understand, there are 16 other cases which have got to be heard before City's case is being debated by the tribunal. And it seems that we are now looking at the summer for a resolution. So which means we're looking perhaps July, perhaps August, so very close to what normally would be the start of the 2020-21 season. I mean, I know everything is up in the air. And so Cass has said, we're monitoring the situation. And obviously, the situation changes from day to day. But the early resolution that some people were actually hoping, for the sake of everybody, would happen, doesn't seem to be happening anymore.
Argentina, River Plate, what they have said they won't play, right?
Yeah, there was the games were planned to, you know, get on at the weekend, even behind closed doors. And in fact, they were at the stadium. Everybody was there, the rivals, the referees, and so forth. The only team that only thing that was missing was River Plate. They decided not to turn up because they thought it was a ridiculous decision, and they were right.
I presume they'd have enough clout to get away with doing that.
I think River
they?
Plate do have a little bit of clout, yes.
The football in Australia is continuing, Lord knows why. A-League and W-League played over the weekend. The W-League final is still set to go ahead next weekend, I think behind closed doors. And the FFA have released a statement saying they want all football to continue. And they've, you know, sent out these messages about just don't shake hands and don't do this and it'll be behind closed doors. I just think it's utterly ridiculous. And so many of these players as well who play in Australia are going to finish the season and expect to go home to England, Scotland, America, and they either won't be able to or will have to and then isolate for 2 weeks. I just think the decision is utterly ridiculous, and I think we'll start to see things like what River Plate did, which is if they still plan to go ahead with these behind closed doors next weekend, I think some teams just won't turn up.
Some more Ronaldinho news. Ewan Marshall, Glaswegian journalist in Sao Paulo, saying that Paraguayan police searching the home of the entrepreneur Dalia Lopez, accused of having given Ronaldinho and his brother fake Paraguayan passports. The cops found footballs with Ronaldinho's face on them, the same image used on the passports. There's a photo of hundreds of footballs that he was going to sell, by all accounts. Starting today, it's a futsal tournament in prison in Paraguay, 15 teams participating. The winning team will be given a 16-kilo piglet as a trophy. Is it alive? It's a living piglet.
What and it will just live in the prison?
What the prison is meant to do with a 16-kilo, I mean, regardless of the weight. But they have to kill it?
Would be advisable before eating it, yes.
Forget coronavirus. That is so unsanitary.
It really is. I mean, I'm not an expert. As we keep saying, we're not. None of us here are experts on the
coronavirus. I'm an expert enough to know that you need to kill a pig before you can eat it.
Anyway, if you put that on instead of Match of the Day, I would watch that futsal tournament. Lots of questions for you. We don't have time for all of them, but here are a few. Ellis James has been in touch. When this is all over, will Philippe give me intensive French lessons until I'm fluent?
Yeah, actually, I probably would be in need of some money before then.
Say,
so, you know, but we can do that.
I mean, I'm saying in about a month's time, Philippe teaches us lot and Ellis French. Frankly, sounds like a pod to me.
Yep.
Matt says, which Premier League manager do you reckon is most likely to have panic-bought Bog Roll?
Sean Dyche.
Do you think Dyche? No, I think Dyche would be out in the woods. I don't think he'd worry about it at all. I would say Dyche is least likely to have panic-bought Bog Roll. I think Eddie Howe's sensible. He wouldn't want to take too much, but he'd definitely have enough.
I'd like to have a look at Jose Mourinho's cellar.
I was about to say, Mourinho's house is wall-to-wall quilted.
Andrex.
Isn't it?
I reckon Sean Dyche is into some of the conspiracy theories, though. He looks like a conspiracy theory man to me.
That's highly possible. Adam says, I went to my local co-op today, nothing noticeably absent from the shelves. However, they were selling official Euro 2020 stickers. How optimistic are they being?
They'll be collector's items.
Oh, they will.
Don't forget that. It's going to be like Edward VIII's sovereign, you know, the coin which is worth now millions.
So you should fill that album and then,
yeah,
and then, you know, put it in a keep bag, whatever that is.
Did I see a photo doing the rounds this morning of Fred on Blackpool Pier?
Yeah.
Fred went to Blackpool Pleasure Beach.
Okay.
He's got to go somewhere.
Not social distancing himself. Instead, chucking himself in a theme park and having a well of a time.
Some ideas to get us through. Doug says, can we get Barry to read song lyrics again? Go on, Baz. Go on.
Well, I'm not really. Nothing is off the table, people.
Adam says, Guardian Fish or Not Fish Weekly? Well, we're not ruling it out. And Trevor Pike says, I want deep.
Fish or not fish?
Yes, he
man,
would, wouldn't
man,
he?
Trevor, I want deep dives into the panellists. Who are they really? Where did they come from? All at a very low, sombre interview voice. Listen, keep your ideas coming because
God knows we'll need them.
Exactly, but that'll do for today. Barry, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Flo.
Thank you.
Thank you, Philippe.
Thank you, Max.
Stay safe, everybody. Keep washing your hands and we'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.